The CDC says you can ditch your mask if you've gotten both of your COVID shots. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this Monday, to mask or not to mask. Let us know what you're doing out there. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how Mayo Clinic is leading on a new national effort, the Shots to Save Lives vaccination campaign. First, though, here's your COVID update. The state reports that cases of COVID increased by 2,482 over the weekend, with additional deaths, 19 of them. The death toll in the state from COVID now stands at 36,075. Now, amidst those numbers, Florida residents have a decision to make this week, to mask or not to mask. For all of us whose bare faces have scarcely been seen in public for over a year, we suddenly have all these options. Will you leave your mask behind for the coffee shop, the neighbor's house, maybe the office? The CDC now says fully vaccinated Americans can ditch those masks, both inside and outside. Chad Nielsen is director of infection prevention and control at UF Health Jax. He has some thoughts about this new mask directive, and he's on the line. Hi, Chad. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. Are you still masking up or not? If you own a business, are you still asking your employees and customers to wear a mask? Give us a call. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open too. So, Chad, some have said this decision from CDC might be premature. Others have said they've really based it on a lot of research. What do you think in your role at UF Health Jax about this?
Yeah, so I can see both sides of the coin. However, I'm more in the research camp. So this was made in lieu of all of the scientific evidence that these vaccines work. They work not only against the strains we've had, they work against the variant strains that are continuing to pop up around the world. And so this is our step towards normalcy. Get vaccinated, then you will be free to drop masking mandates. And so I think this was based on research, it was based on science, and it's a good step. I do think there's some peril that is coming with it, though, regarding the enforcement of it and how businesses will react. But it is the right move from a scientific perspective.
Right. We are hearing stories about that, of customers getting combative when they go into a business that still is asking for masks. That is a real thing.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate. We saw this when businesses started to open up earlier in sort of the recovery period last summer when we had a lull in cases, and I was unfortunately expecting this to escalate now that some businesses are still requiring masks. And from my perspective, it's not only within their right to continue to ask masking, but it's probably a good thing, being as that there's still about 40 to 50% of Floridians who are not vaccinated and who are eligible. So do you want a lot of unvaccinated people roaming around your store without a mask on? Probably not. So I think what we're looking at is really, we have to be mindful of where we're going in these stores and how they're continuing to enforce their masking mandates or not.
And masks are still required in some places, like public transportation, for example. I think hospitals, too. Are you still insisting on masks at UF Health?
Absolutely. So hospitals actually across the region and across the nation are still requiring masks. They are still within the recommendations that CDC puts out for healthcare facilities, as well as public transportation, and also any private business that asks you to do so. So yes, here at the hospitals, not only my own, but in the region, we are still requiring masks of visitors and patients who are coming in for clinic.
Now, over the weekend, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, said kids 12 and under should continue to wear masks in school this fall because they might not yet be eligible for the vaccine. Governor DeSantis, though, wants to make that optional. St. John's County Schools has already indicated they will make masks in schools optional this fall. What do you make of these directives?
Well, it's hard right now to understand which way we should go with this. From a scientific perspective, we know that children are very unlikely to transmit COVID. They're very unlikely to become very sick from COVID unless they have some other kind of condition. And many schools and preschools across the area have already made masks optional, and we have not seen outbreaks of COVID-19. So while Dr. Fauci and some of the federal government NIH folks say, well, we should probably mask kids who can't get vaccines, we haven't seen evidence of large-scale outbreaks really across the world in unvaccinated, unmasked children population. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens, but I think you can probably have sufficient evidence on either side of that issue to feel comfortable sending your kid to school with or without a mask.
And it's interesting to note the politicization of this, as we've talked about before, Chad. Republicans are more likely to not want to wear masks. At the same time, there are groups of folks who tend to lean Democratic who have expressed hesitancy about masks and vaccines. What would you say to those who are listening to this new directive and they say, well, I think I'm going to keep masking up because I don't know who I'm coming into contact with. Like, even if I'm protected by the vaccine, I still might get sick and I might be around people who aren't vaccinated. So I'm just going to keep masking up.
Yeah, I think it's an entirely reasonable decision to make. Look, we still can have breakthrough cases. They are very rare. And by breakthrough case, I mean you've been fully vaccinated more than 2 weeks out from your final series of the shot. If people want to continue to mask, you know, this is America. We are a free country, as many people will say, mm-hmm. on both sides of that coin. There's no harm in continuing to mask up moving forward. What we really need to encourage people to do is, number one, not judge people for their decision one way or another, because you don't know people's motivations. And number two, just be kind to folks and follow the business rules of the establishments you're going in. Frankly, masking has been part of the Asian cultures across their countries for several decades, whether it's due to pollution or seasonal illness. And so I do see that what's coming here in the U.S. is moving forward. We're probably going to see a lot more masks here in the future, whether there's a pandemic or not.
Right. It's become a social norm here. So do you think during flu season that will be a more common thing to see folks just masking up when the flu virus is running around?
I certainly think so. We only vaccinate roughly 40% of individuals in the United States every flu season against the flu. And so I absolutely anticipate seeing more masks being worn on public places come the fall and come flu season. We didn't have a flu season this year, and that's a good thing, not only because people got vaccinated at a higher rate against flu, but also because we were masking. I do think that that's an effective way to control infectious diseases, so I do anticipate moving forward during flu season, you're going to see a lot more masks.
Our guest this hour is Chad Nielsen, Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UF Health Jacksonville. Now that the CDC says you can ditch your mask if you've been vaccinated, will you do that? Here's a tweet from Terry. Unmasking is an experiment to understand what may happen to vaccinated and unvaccinated populations. The message to communicate is unmask at your own risk. Personally, I'm still going to mask, even though I've been vaccinated, she says. 549-2937. Jim is in Riverside. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to find out if your guest has any data on, for vaccinated people, the asymptomatic transmission. So in other words, can fully vaccinated people still transmit the virus to unvaccinated people?
Thanks for that question, Jim. What about that, Chad?
Yeah, so that's a great question that we don't have a full answer for yet. A very public display of breakthrough cases happening asymptomatically is actually the New York Yankees right now. They have 9 members of their club that have tested positive for COVID. All are unvaccinated, or all are vaccinated, but all are asymptomatic. So breakthrough cases can happen. They tend to be asymptomatic, and they're caught during a screening, but we don't have that full data yet to know how the vaccines truly affect transmission, because clearly if people are still able to get COVID-19, there is still, even if unlikely, a small chance they can transmit. And the New York Yankees are sort of the model right now that the CDC and others are studying as it were, on how these asymptomatic breakthrough cases are happening.
The HBO host Bill Maher is another one. He had to cancel a taping of his show this week. He got screened and was tested positive for COVID asymptomatically, even though he has been vaccinated. So, yeah, it's rare, as you say, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we're just going to have more data and more evidence and research studies to show what that looks like.
It's 549-2937. Jane in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hello, Jane. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being there. I just want to point out that the argument that it's a free country is only half of the argument. The support for choice in America and a variety of laws is freedom with responsibility. And I think we have to remember that when we make choices and say freedom is our excuse or our reason. We can't have a gun without responsible use. We can't drive a car without responsible use. So freedom balanced with responsibility needs to be taken into account to maybe settle down some of these arguments. And the question is, yes, that's a free choice, but am I being responsible to myself and to other people?
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for that. I think we're all struggling to find that balance, Chad, as we go about our daily lives.
Yeah, and she's absolutely right. That freedom of choice really right now scientifically should be if you've been vaccinated, you have a choice now whether or not you want to move forward and wear a mask. The CDC is unequivocally clear, though. If you are not vaccinated, you should still be wearing a mask in public. And so per Jane's point, I mean, she's absolutely spot on. Freedom with responsibility to behave and to act in a certain way to protect us all and move forward with the cause. She's absolutely right.
What about herd immunity? About 60% of Americans now have gotten at least one of the shots, but less than 50% are fully vaccinated.
Yeah, so herd immunity has been tossed around really since the start of this pandemic. There's this idea that if there's enough people vaccinated and enough people who have had COVID and induced natural immunity, that we're going to reach herd immunity. Herd immunity at this point is very unlikely to happen when it comes to COVID-19. I don't think any epidemiologist has a thought that herd immunity is not only will be achievable, but will be long-lasting. And herd immunity as a nation doesn't really exist. Herd immunity in most epidemiology studies shows that it's really on a much more localized level, which is why when you see a measles outbreak happen in somewhere in Washington, it tends to stay very localized based on the vaccination patterns of that particular population. So this idea that the U.S. is going to ever get herd immunity for COVID-19 is likely not plausible. And so I think at this point we need to focus on just continuing to vaccinate, continuing to educate people who are hesitant for the vaccine, because really it's protecting everyone, but it's really protecting them as well. We've seen a nice decline in hospitalizations and cases here in the North Florida region, and we know at this point the vaccine population is not likely to drive these numbers any further, but the unvaccinated 40% or more can drive a continued pandemic, and that's why I think we need to double down on the education to get people vaxxed.
We'll talk more about that in a minute. First, a few more calls for Chad Nielsen, Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UF Health Jacksonville. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the CDC's new guidelines on masks. Basically, they say you can toss your mask if you've been vaccinated. Will you? 549-2937. Richard is on the line. He lives up in Georgia, but works here in Jacksonville, he says. Hi, Richard. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I was standing in line at McDonald's, but I'm getting out of line.
Okay. Get that Egg McMuffin.
I can wait at McDonald's. So here's the thing. I got vaccinated back in March with the Moderna. The first shot at the beginning of March, the last shot at the end of March. The Moderna and the Pfizer, which my wife was vaccinated with the Pfizer back, I think, in January, December time frame. They came out before the Johnson & Johnson vaccine came out. The Johnson & Johnson, from what I understand, includes the variants of South African, Brazilian, and the British, while the Pfizer and the Moderna do not. So I asked my doctor about that, and she said, well, you're not planning on going to Britain. I said, no, but the British variant is all over the United States already. So wouldn't it help me to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine since it's been already past 2 weeks of my last vaccine?
Hmm.
doesn't that make sense? I'll be vaccinated against those other variants too.
Okay. Thank you for that, Richard. Chad, does he need to do that, or is he good with the two Moderna shots?
No, he doesn't need a booster of anything else at this point. So when Johnson & Johnson came out, the reason they came out after is just because their developmental stages of the vaccine and trials did not put them out sort of first to market like Moderna and Pfizer. The Moderna and Pfizer vaccines have continuously been tested against each new variant that has appeared in society, and they are effective at stopping those variants. So we want to be clear that at this point there is no need to get another vaccine if you've already completed the series of Moderna, Pfizer, or Johnson & Johnson. You are protected against the variants that are out there, and as each new variant sort of pops up, they continually test the vaccines, and they are proving to be effective against them. Now, in the future, we might have a variant, which it's flu, right? Flu changes every single season, which is why we always have to get a new flu shot. In the future, we could need a booster shot against other variants, but that time is not now. So there's no need for him to go out and get any other vaccines. He should be protected moving forward until medical science and the CDC says otherwise.
Duke tweets the show, I got both Pfizer shots, but I know there are immunocompromised people out there. If there's even a slight chance I could catch COVID and infect someone else, I feel I need to keep masking since less than 40% of Americans are fully vaccinated. From Facebook, a listener writes, we are still masking at stores and restaurants because an unmasked vaccinated person is indistinguishable from a mask hole. That's her term for people who might be carrying the virus and refuse to wear masks. Okay, let's go to Drew in Arlington. Hi, Drew. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. I just had a quick question for your guests. I had COVID over Christmas, and I have antibodies. I actually donate platelets.
Oh, okay.
I was just curious if I needed to, like, double down and get the vaccine as well.
Yeah, yeah. We get that question a lot, and that's great you're donating, Drew. Chad, I believe the answer is he should get the vaccine?
Yes, absolutely. He should go ahead and get the vaccine series. The reason why, we do know that what we call natural immunity, so you have natural immunity because you actually got COVID, can be waning after 6 to 9 months in certain people. And actually, there's sort of a dose-response relationship. If you had a really severe case of COVID, you're more likely to have immunity for longer. But for someone who has recovered from COVID, the CDC and other recommendations are go ahead, get vaccinated anyways, double yourself down there, because we know at this point the vaccines, Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson, are showing really high efficacy at long-term intervals. And unfortunately, we don't know yet how long natural immunity of COVID will last. There has been a lot of evidence to show that people actually lose that long-term immunity if they have not had a hard case of it. So please go ahead and get vaccinated. You're going to be good to go for a long time if you do.
Donna in San Marco. Hello, Donna. Go ahead, Donna.
And who just had a question, kind of answered my question. I found myself in a car a couple weekends ago on my way to Amelia Island for a dinner with my sister, her husband, and another couple. The gentlemen, both guys, had really bad cases of COVID and were down for a week or more, but, you know, recuperated at home, never went to the hospital. But yesterday my sister sent me a copy of her, she and her husband had their antibody tests because she doesn't want to get shots, and I've been fully vaccinated, and I've tested positive for it after my second shot, after spending a day with them. And so I'm trying to make my case, which is why I wanted to call today, for them to please go ahead and get their shots.
Yeah. Thank you, Donna. Yeah. Thank you for that. And let's talk a little bit more about that, Chad, encouraging the unvaccinated to go and get vaccinated. After the break, we're going to be talking about the Shots to Save Lives campaign, which is a formal effort. Mm-hmm. What's your message to everyone out there who is not convinced they should be vaccinated?
Well, it's hard, right? Everybody has their own reasons for why they're not getting this shot if they're eligible, whether that's they feel like they don't have enough information, they're worried about potential long-term effects. It really takes an individual conversation with those people to figure out what will move the needle with them, what will get them to get that vaccine, because everybody's different. Most of it is based in fear. We know that people fear the unknown. They fear whether or not this is going to have long-term side effects, whether or not this is going to work, whether or not the government is implanting a tracking beacon in them, which they're not. Your iPhone does that already. So it's really hard to target educational messaging when people have so many different types of fears over this vaccine. But we have to. We have to have conversations with people. We have to answer their questions backed with research, backed with not Wikipedia or Facebook post messages, but backed with actual scientific research or by people like me who are in the field and can speak to it well. And that's what's going to convince people to get this vaccine moving forward. I always say to young people who say, well, I'm not gonna have any effects from COVID even if I get it. There are still long-term side effects that we can't explain. If you lost your sense of taste and smell due to a COVID infection, we like to remind people your sense of taste and smell is in your brain. That's where you get that from. A certain part of your brain controls that. So that means you've had COVID and it's affected your brain. We don't know the long-term impacts of that. So we try and move that needle with young people to say, well, we know with relative confidence that there's not going to be long-term side effects of a COVID vaccine, but we don't know what long-term effects of COVID will have for us. That's the fear that we need to have, and you're only going to have that problem if you're unvaccinated at this point. So reaching people, speaking to their fears, and trying to have them overcome that, I think, is really what's going to move the needle moving forward.
Let's make one more note of our discussion here. Your boss, UF Health CEO, Dr. Leon Haley, said Thursday that he anticipates the Jaguars will be able to safely host more than 65,000 fans for home games when the season kicks off this fall. Haley's own son plays for the New Orleans Saints, and Dr. Haley is saying that is based on the rate of vaccinations and that there has been no new surge of variants. Yes?
Yeah, and he's correct. So the Jaguars and all teams that are outdoors really have several things going with them. Number one, those activities are outdoors, and we know the risk of catching COVID unmasked, unvaccinated or not, is very low because you're outdoors. Now, obviously, you're adding crowds onto that. However, he's right. The rate of vaccinations, although slowed, is still increasing. And I do think that come the fall when the Jaguars kick off or NFL or any other sort of large outdoor activities, I think enough people will be vaccinated at that point to be able to hold those events safely. I think we're still maybe a little bit too early now, but I definitely think by the fall that rate of vaccination will tick up. And I think other people will start being encouraged by it as well to get vaccinated. The Jaguars and many other teams are already talking about holding vaccine events at the stadium. So come to the game, get a vaccine. I follow the Atlanta Braves and baseball, and they've been doing it for several weeks now. And so I do think those events will be able to start happening in the fall. We've seen businesses open up now, and it'll be interesting to watch now that the masking guidance has changed what we see moving forward.
Always great to get you on the show, Chad. He's Chad Nielsen, Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UF Health Jacksonville. Have a great week, Chad.
Yeah, thanks. You too, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Later in the hour, we'll tell you how Jacksonville is celebrating Juneteenth a little early. But up next,
this is something that's really alarming and concerning to us, as well as a lot of people across the country.
How Mayo Clinic is joining a national effort, the Shots to Save Lives campaign. That's next. We'll be right back. Well, today, a milestone is expected on vaccination rates. 60% of Americans are now reported to have gotten at least one shot to protect against COVID. However, vaccine hesitancy is a real issue across the country, and it is preventing true herd immunity. Doctors and hospitals are banding together nationwide in a new campaign urging Americans to get the vaccine. For more, I spoke with Dr. Richard White of Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic about the Shots to Save Lives campaign. Dr. White, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, Melissa. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Sure. Let's talk about the campaign that Mayo Clinic and other leading hospitals are focused on, raising awareness about getting vaccinated. There are large numbers of Americans who are still vaccine hesitant, and they kind of fall into different buckets. Let's talk through all of these communities, beginning with African Americans. According to a new survey from the Kaiser Family Foundation, 35% of African Americans are reluctant to receive the vaccine. Can you talk a little bit about those numbers and how Mayo Clinic is working to reassure patients that it's safe to get the vaccine?
Yeah, sure, Melissa. So first of all, you know, thanks for the invitation to be on with you. And this is something that's really alarming and concerning to us as well as a lot of people across the country. We're privileged to be leading the charge among a group of hospitals and organizations through our Shot to Save Lives campaign. And as you mentioned, you know, we're really focusing on particularly our communities of color, as you stated, have had lower rates of the vaccine, really disproportionate to their share of the actual infections and particularly of mortalities that we've unfortunately seen across the country. So one of the things that we're doing is really getting the word out there. You know, we know that there's some vaccine hesitancy, particularly in the African-American community. And first and foremost, you know, I think that one of the reasons for that is because there's been a lack of really appropriate mechanisms to diffuse accurate information related to the safety, related to the effectiveness and the benefits of the current vaccines that are available.
Right. Which is, so you're trying now to spread that message that the vaccine is safe, the vaccine is effective. There are historical reasons that we could get into as to why many African Americans don't always trust medical experts. And if you could, can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, I really think about, you know, three factors that unfortunately I think have contributed to the disparity that we see in terms of COVID-19 infections and death rates, particularly among the African-American community. The first factor is a term that we refer to as the syndemic. So really this derives from the word synergy and epidemic. So there's really been a clear interaction between other conditions that are not contagious, like obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, other chronic diseases that especially are frequent among certain segments of our population, including the elderly, communities of color, individuals maybe with poor access to care and lower income. So these factors, along with other factors that we refer to as the social determinants of health, really have placed black people in our nation at higher risk of exposure and poor outcomes related to the COVID-19 infection. So that's one factor.
Mm-hmm.
The other factor is what we call is an infodemic. You know, so there's really been an excess of information, including misinformation and misrepresented information on social media that unfortunately I think has caused people, particularly in the black community, to have confusion and has added to levels of mistrust around the vaccine and around the pandemic in general.
Sure. And I was referring to historical incidents like the Tuskegee experiment and others that have over the years have.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting conversation. You know, I think that a lot of individuals in our black community do refer either consciously or even subconsciously back to the events such as the Tuskegee experiment, which unfortunately, I think, created deep grooves of mistrust among the African-American community as it relates to just the scientific and the medical community in particular.
Sure. So all of this is problematic because herd immunity is the key to ending this epidemic. Getting the majority of people vaccinated.
It is, Melissa. You nailed it on the head. Herd immunity, if people are not familiar with that term, really that just refers to a certain level of a percentage of individuals across our country, which a lot of experts are saying are probably around 75% or so of people across our nation that need to be vaccinated in order for us to reach levels where the spread of the virus from person to person is low enough to where that even in someone who was not necessarily vaccinated would be protected by this herd immunity because enough people around them have been vaccinated and protected against the spread of the infection.
What are the most common pieces of disinformation that you're hearing out there that are preventing people from getting the vaccine that you would like to debunk?
Yeah, so there's a lot. Some of my favorite myths that I would love to debunk are the when people are concerned that the side effects of the actual vaccine are worse than the natural infection, or that you could get COVID-19 or spread it to others by getting vaccinated. I think that's a common misconception, a misnomer that a lot of people, unfortunately, are believing. There's certainly some side effects that are pretty common from getting the vaccine, but in no way are they better than actually having the natural infection, which we know, looking at data across the country, has unfortunately killed a lot of people.
Yeah. But the message behind Shots to Save Lives is if you get vaccinated, you're not only protecting yourself, you're protecting your family, your community.
Exactly. And that's one of the major reasons why we're encouraging people to give serious consideration to getting vaccinated. There's great data showing that the vaccine is safe, that it's effective. So when an individual is vaccinated and completes the series of the COVID vaccine, we know that their immune system is having a strong response that's going to be able to protect them against the infection personally, but also from spreading the virus to others in their family. So that it's really when an individual decides to get vaccinated, they're making a very smart decision, not only for their personal health, but also for their loved ones as well.
And as we talk about this campaign, which is headed up by the Cleveland Clinic and Mayo Clinic, along with dozens of other healthcare institutions, you're really working with healthcare professionals across the country behind the Shots to Save Lives campaign. There's a website people can look at too, isn't there?
There is. We would highly encourage people to go to the campaign website, which is ourshotstosave.org. There people can find links to the CDC vaccination locations, get answers to frequently asked questions on the website, and particularly find out where within their community they can get access to the vaccine.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. White. He's Dr. Richard White, internist and pediatrician with Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. As I mentioned, Mayo, Cleveland Clinic, and many other institutions are behind the Shots to Save Lives campaign going on right now. Thanks so much, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Well, many people celebrate Juneteenth as the day when the South finally freed the slaves. However, the Emancipation Proclamation was actually read on the steps of a courthouse on May 20th, 1865. Now, there's a recent push to make May 20th a day of celebration in Florida, and that's exactly what's being planned here in Jacksonville this month at James Weldon Johnson Park. We've got a preview right now as we welcome City Council member Jacoby Pittman. Councilwoman Pittman, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to hear your voice. And also on the line, Liz McCoy. She's executive director of James Weldon Johnson Park. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
Good to have you both. Councilmember Pittman, let's begin with you. Juneteenth is historically recognized as happening June 19th. The day of emancipation. Mm-hmm. But there's more to the history. May 20th is an important day.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us about this?
Actually, I can. The Emancipation commemorates really the announcement of the proclamation in Tallahassee on the Capitol on May the 20th. So Florida was actually when the emancipation happened. And then on June 19th is actually when Texas was freed. And so, you know, now we're really trying to educate the community what emancipation is and what it's all about. And, you know, usually when you know better, you do better. And so I really think the emancipation in Florida was an opportunity for us to free the slaves. And not only that, Jacksonville has some connection with that. So actually when General McCook came to Florida to surrender the Confederate forces at the end of the Civil War, the same day, General Gilmore also had sent a letter from Jacksonville via a train. And then afterwards, when the emancipation was certified here in the state of Florida, Jacksonville black troops took over, as well as the U.S. military. So we have some connection there, and it's so exciting that we're going to be able to celebrate this day in the James Weldon Johnson Park. Mm. And Liz and her team and I have had a great opportunity of putting this together as the inaugural emancipation celebration in James Weldon Johnson's Park. So the history behind it, the connection to Jacksonville, and the support of the city council who passed and supported the legislation, as well as Mayor Lenny Curry. So we're excited about celebrating this day on May 20th this week.
Yeah, coming up this week. And Liz, yes, tell us a little bit more about what's on the agenda. People need to come to the park and enjoy the day.
It absolutely is.
Yes, we're going to have a great, great lineup. It will serve to educate but also entertain. We're going to have poetry from Love Rains and Mal Jones. We have the Gullah Geechee Nation Dance Troupe performing. We have Nankama Pan-African Dance and Drum performing. We've got Mama Blue, a young violinist and vocalist named Cutie, who's fantastic. And, of course, everybody's favorite, the Cats Downstairs, will be headlining and that evening. And it will all be hosted by Rockman Johnson. So it promises to be a lot of fun. We've got food trucks. We've got a bake sale with the best red velvet cake in the city. And
nice.
We've got a community art project led by Shawana Brooks and Roosevelt Watson of 6 Feet Away Gallery. They're going to be out there. And it'll just be a ton of fun.
Fun and educational. People will learn about the holiday. Let me read this email to you from Mike in St. Augustine. He writes, while Tallahassee declared their Emancipation Day as May 20th, in St. Augustine, we celebrate it on January 1st. He says historians wrote this on the morning of March 11th, 1862, federal gunboats anchored outside the inlet. Confederate troops abandoned their post and marched off into Florida's interior. A rowboat brought a U.S. Navy commander under a flag of truce to the town wharf, where he met the mayor. The city council quietly signed a surrender decree and turned St. Augustine over to the North. On January 1st, 1863, Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation was read to slaves within the city. Many of St. Augustine's freed slaves enlisted in the U.S. Army, serving in several regiments made up of African Americans. Three black St. Augustinians also served in the Confederate Army, and the city contributed three generals to the conflict, including Kirby Smith. Some 16,000 Floridians served in the Confederate forces, and 5,000 gave their lives during the war. A little more history from our listeners in St. Augustine. And so, Jacoby, this is a sort of an evolving thing, isn't it, as Juneteenth becomes more widely celebrated?
It is. And I think, you know, for many years, you know, it was one of those things that weren't talked about as much. And so, you know, this year in the legislation across the state of Florida, we want to recognize the date that Florida was emancipated and when slaves were freed. And so with that in mind, you know, we're taking the next couple of years to educate the state of Florida. And some of my colleagues across the state will eventually like to be, would like this to be a paid holiday. But for right now, we want to celebrate.
And that is happening in some states, right? Some states have that.
They are. And so we want to make sure that we know the difference of when Florida was emancipated compared to when Texas, which was the last state. And so this is an opportunity where many residents over the state have celebrated, but I don't think not in a collaborative effort. And so that's what we're doing across the state of Florida. Jacksonville is being a part of that now. Jacksonville was a part of the history. And so we want to continue that legacy and continue to celebrate. We realize that there, you know, were many wounds that could not be healed over the years, but this celebration will bring our community together to talk about the history mm-hmm. and the importance of us celebrating. And so I'm just excited that, you know, my colleagues and the mayor, you know, are standing in the gap. And this tribute reminds us of the significance of the proclamation announced in Tallahassee, and that we had our colored troops involved. So I'm excited and really glad that we have an opportunity to share with the many residents in Jacksonville and hope that they will come out and join us on Thursday.
Right. We need to note, too, the Florida Senate did pass a bill last month commemorating both Juneteenth, June 19th, and Emancipation Day in Florida, May 20th, as legal holidays in the state. Has yet to mm-hmm. be signed into law, though. So mm-hmm. with all of this said, Liz, tell us when people can start coming downtown to James Weldon Johnson Park on Thursday, May 20th, and take part in all of the free fun.
Absolutely. It is all free. We start at 11 a.m., and we're going to start with, of course, James Weldon Johnson's Lift Every Voice and Sing, and which everybody will be encouraged to sing along. And we will go all the way until 8 o'clock that night, and there will be something to do throughout the day. We'll have performances just scattered throughout the day, and, of course, that community art project. We've got vendors that you can shop, and, of course, the great food and fun.
Yeah, so come on out May 20th for a celebration of Emancipation Day in Florida, the day that the Emancipation Proclamation was read from the courthouse steps in Florida. It happened May 20th, 1865. And, of course, Juneteenth is observed around the country on June 19th. Thank you both so much, City Council Member Jacoby Pittman and Liz McCoy, Executive Director at James Weldon Johnson Park, the former Hemming Park. So good to have you both on the show. Have a great time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Again, that's all day and night, May 20th in the park. Check it out. Something else we want you to check out after the break, Theater Jacksonville, as their actors are back on stage and performing. Virtually, anyway. We'll have a preview of their new show in just a moment. Don't go away. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. Stay with us.
The First Coast Freethought Society book group will discuss The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism by Catherine Stewart, 3 p.m. Sunday, June 6th via Zoom. Details at meetup.com/humanistbookgroup. CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at 904-281-5757.
Juneteenth celebrations recognizing the end of slavery are gaining popularity nationally, but Emancipation Day in Florida is May 20th, 1865. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will discuss efforts to recognize Florida's Emancipation Day. We'll talk about early tourism and more on Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
For 50 years, NPR has brought you perspective on the news, the big picture, crucial context, and thoughtful analysis. Public radio is also a place for perspectives you might not hear anywhere else. Not only do you hear from journalists, experts, and leaders, you also hear directly from the people at the heart of the story. Listen to NPR and hear every voice.
To give a gift now, go to wjct.org/radio, and thank you.
Our relationship to the environment is tied to where we live and the connection we have to that place. That's driven many to fight for clean beaches and plastic-free oceans. But as the green movement fights for a cleaner planet, does it care enough about the fight for a fairer one? The push to make the green space less white, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, tickets are now on sale for Theater Jacksonville's fifth virtual production of the season, The Near Disaster of Jasper and Casper. It's a hilarious adventure tale that's dubbed part Princess Bride and part Harry Potter. Michelle Kindy is general manager at Theater Jax and the director of this show. She's on the line. Hey, Michelle, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So this is a family comedy virtually presented. Tell us about the show.
Oh, it's, you know, it's been one of those adventures in its making as well as in its presentation. And it's a solo show done by Jason Woods. And I know you know Jason and have had him on the show before.
He's a very talented performer.
Absolutely. And he's always working. And in this case, you know, in the past, I think you've seen his one-man Christmas Carol. And in this case, he has taken a show that he was going to present at the United Solo Festival in New York and London and brought it to us and allowed us to be the one who get to debut it. And it really is an adventure fairy tale, mm-hmm. Of which he presents it in just shy of an hour and a half, nonstop character changes, nonstop location changes. And the response that we got this weekend has been fabulous. People are on the edge. They said, quote, I'm on the edge of my seat. By the time I found out it was over, I was exhausted. And they all wondered how exhausted he was.
Right. It takes a lot of energy and talent to hold the stage all by yourself for an entire production. So this show, The Near Disaster of Jasper and Casper, is making its debut in Jacksonville, but it's also been accepted for performance in London's West End and in New York this fall. So we're getting the sneak peek?
If the United Solo Festival's remount, which is what they're supposed to do, yes, it is a sneak peek. And he was supposed to go last year, of course, because of COVID. What Jason did was interesting because we've struggled here at the theater trying to find material to work with because many playwrights don't actually own the rights to video or stream their work. It's, for example, when we did Thurgood earlier this year, we couldn't video. It had to be live streamed because that is owned by HBO, which, you know, you reported earlier was bought up by AT&T. These are big corporations who are not going to give the rights to small theaters to be able to do. By having someone like Jason come and give us their work, we were able not only to do this and film it, which he did several times in one take, but we're able to put it on demand so folks can watch it anytime. And it's incredibly generous as a gift and a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's it been like for you at Theater Jax? We need to give you all the props because, of course, you are the oldest community theater in Florida for 101 years. You have been doing uninterrupted performances right there on the San Marcos Square. You are on the National Register of Historic Places. If you have never been to a show at Theater Jacksonville, you need to go and check it out, especially when they start doing in-person productions again. It's an incredible historic site. What's it been like, Michelle, throughout this pandemic to keep the live theater flame burning?
It's been a whirlwind of a year that seems to have lasted forever and yet gone by very quickly because we have been so busy. We are consecutively working, and we did not, even though we had to close the doors literally days before we were celebrating our 100th birthday bash in March of 2020, we jumped right back in, and we used the tools and the resources locally, folks here who just came and stepped in to help us do this virtual work. So we did virtual summer camp. We're back this year with a limited in-person summer camp. That's going to be our first foray back into the in-person world starting in June. All of our classes, all of our workshops, all of our main stage shows, all continued. We did even theater for babies in reduced numbers continued. The only thing we weren't able to do was get back in the schools, which we hope to do so next year now that the vaccines are getting to the school age kids. So we're thrilled, but it's been a whirlwind and it's been exhausting, and we have had so much support from this community. You can't put into words what it's like to have a phone call that someone just says how much they appreciated us doing our very best with our limited resources to get our storytelling into their homes.
That's great. I am so glad to hear that. That is so exciting. It's good to hear your voice, Michelle, and so exciting to hear this production. Get your tickets now for Theater Jacksonville's fifth virtual production of the season, The Near Disaster of Jasper and Casper. It runs through May 23rd. Tickets available at theaterjax.com. On-demand viewing also available through their site. This is a one-man production starring the incredible performer Jason Woods, the acclaimed actor and playwright. And this is a preview because his production has been accepted for performance at the United Solo Festival in London's West End and New York's 42nd Street Theater Row in the fall. So you will get in on the ground floor to see this new work. Michelle, thank you. She's Michelle Kindy, General Manager and Director at Theater Jacksonville. Again, theaterjacks.com for more. Have a great show, Michelle.
Thanks so much. You too. Bye-bye.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening, and to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, Director Josh Torres, Editorial Director Jessica Palumbo, and Digital Editor Bill Bortsfield. Plus you. Keep your emails and feedback coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen. You can also listen right through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.